This is another special addendum to the Global Reset Survival Guide. This is about living without electricity. Many people don't realize how difficult it will be to live without electricity, even for a short period of time. But I want you to start thinking about what it means to live without electricity. What are some of the challenges that you'll face? And let's start with shelter, because your house, if you live in a humid area, your house will quickly become a mold petri dish. That's right. You won't be able to use air conditioning, so you won't be able to keep your air dry. Your air will become humid as the air is outside, and then your house will begin to mold. Now, mold can be very toxic, obviously. Breathing it in, having it around the house, it can cause chronic fatigue syndrome and many other things. This is why it's crucial to think about earth-sheltered homes. An earth-sheltered home uses very little electricity for heating or cooling, very little. It uses the normalcy of the temperature of the soil, of course, which is more steady throughout the year. But most homes built today are nothing but sort of 2x4. They look like toothpicks rising up out of the ground with very little insulation, just enough to meet the minimum building code standards. And if you go even a day without electricity in a hot climate, let's say anywhere in the South from Los Angeles all the way over to Miami, your house quickly becomes very, very hot. And in the summer months, your house will become well over 100 degrees on the inside with humidity in areas like East Texas, Mississippi, Louisiana, and much of the Midwest as well. Now, for those of you who live in more northern climates, you have the opposite problem. You have the cold in the winter. The good news is it's easier to create heat than it is to create air conditioning. Heat can be created in very easy ways. You can create insulation around yourself using lots of things such as sleeping bags and so on. You can also create heat indoors, but there are fire dangers that you need to be aware of. If you're running around starting fires indoors, you're going to have major problems. So don't do that. You'll burn yourself, your house down. And if you use a portable heater, like a propane heater indoors, you will poison yourself with, I guess it would be carbon dioxide poisoning. Yeah, it's not a good scene to use combustibles indoors. Any firefighter will tell you that they've responded to numerous fires where people were burning candles or using a camp stove indoors. Maybe they were just testing it out in their living room and it caught the curtains on fire, burned down the house. So be very cautious about using heating devices indoors. Whereas insulation around yourself, you know, sleeping bag and so on, is much, much easier to do. So in a collapse, you'd probably rather be in a colder climate than a hotter, humid climate, because at least in the cold climate, you can do something about it. You can still live indoors. You can get out of the wind and not experience the extreme cold even without electricity. Whereas if you're in a hot, humid environment, your indoor environment will probably be uninhabitable very, very quickly. Which brings me to fans. Now, fans can be used with your backup power source. So maybe you've got a backup generator or the tractor PTO generator that I mentioned earlier. You can run fans very inexpensively in terms of power consumption. Those fans might make your indoor environment livable. And if you want to get rid of the black mold, well, sunshine is the answer. You can also use many of the other substances that you have hopefully stockpiled for first aid, such as hydrogen peroxide, IPA, and virucidal or antibacterial substances. Most of those will kill mold spores as well. But then again, you have to make a decision. Do I save these stockpiles for medical use, or do I try to kill the black mold? It becomes a tough decision. All of this underscores the importance of having mosquito netting if you're in an area that's prone to mosquitoes, which is much of the United States during at least the summer months. You may have to open your doors and windows in order to have decent circulation, provide some cooling during the warmer months. I mean, you'll have to have them wide open, which means you'll have mosquitoes invading your home. It's a good idea to have a mosquito net over your bed. And this explains, too, why if you go tour old homes from the 1800s, they all had mosquito nets And they had really, really high ceilings too, by the way, to allow the heat to rise and the cooler air to stay down lower in the room. These were all because they didn't have air conditioning. They didn't have climate control. So they built houses in ways that made them more comfortable. But make no mistake that most people living today, especially in America or first world nations, they have no idea how uncomfortable it can be to live in a structure without electricity, especially when these modern structures were designed to have HVAC systems, you know, air conditioning and heat. So because they're designed with the assumption that those systems would always work, they're not designed with temperature-friendly, passive cooling type of structures in mind. And that's going to make it a lot less comfortable for you if you have to live in one of these structures. You may end up camping outside, depending on where you are. So it's not a bad idea to have a camping tent or some kind of way to survive outside your house. Now, this brings up security questions. If you're no longer able to use your house for shelter, then if you are attacked, then you won't have the advantage of being in the house. If you're attacked while you're outside, sleeping in the backyard in a camping tent or something because it's so hot outside, then you could very easily be overrun, which brings up the importance of observation, of having night watch people, which then underscores the importance of having a larger team. Typically, you want to have a minimum of 10 to 12 people living together, not necessarily under the same structure, but at least able to offer a security for each other. It's very hard to survive these situations if you're just two people or even four, as you always need somebody to watch at night, and you also need a daytime watch person, you know, security-minded individual who can keep an eye on things. And if your group is smaller than, let's say, six people, then you're using a very high percentage of your group just to be able to keep watch on things. Whereas if you've got a sufficiently large group, 10 or 12 people or more, then night guards and daytime guards can be deployed without eating into a significant portion of the size of your group. And that's really important because some people are going to have to be focused on food production or food harvesting, perhaps hunting, perhaps gardening, perhaps wildcrafting foods and so on. You're going to have to spend a lot of time on food just to stay alive, just to have enough food for everybody in your group. You're going to have some people who focus on medicine and health. You'll need other experts in different areas, such as repair, metalworking, you know, construction, things like that. Everybody's going to have a job, and everybody's going to be occupied all the time. There won't be much leisure time in this environment. Living without electricity is very, very challenging. And if you try to do it and you fail, then you die. I would not recommend attempting to live without electricity right now. It's rather brutal. You'll be torturing yourself without good reason, it seems. But you should prepare to be able to live without electricity when that day comes. Remember that most of the water that comes into the homes of people is also pumped by electric-powered pumps. Get used to carrying water from a local water source, which is another reason why it's a great idea to have a country place where you've got a pond, a stream, a river, something like that nearby. You could just reach in there with a bucket, grab some water, carry it back to your water filtration systems, and then filter that water and make it drinkable. You know, eventually, you might have to boil it. You might have to filter it multiple times. It might be very dirty water to start with, so you're going to foul up your filters pretty quickly. This is why it's a good idea to have multiple water filtration devices so that you have, well, backups. You don't want to be anywhere without backups. Now, if you live in a place that you can only get water out of a well, then it becomes more complicated. Do you have a hand pump on that well? I used to live at a location where I drilled a second well, and I put a hand pump on it. And that well, I don't remember the depth of it. Seems like it was a couple hundred feet. It's a lot of work to pump water up a couple of hundred feet if you've never done it before, for all the water you need for washing dishes, bathing, washing hands, making soup, all the things you use water for. If you've never had to hand carry your water or hand pump your water, you don't know the fun that you're missing because it's a tremendous amount of work. You'll burn a lot of calories moving water, which means, of course, you have to have food to provide the calories that you're burning moving water. And to make things even worse, of course, you have to carry water to irrigate the food that you're using to power you with the calories that you're using to carry the water. You can see how this cycle gets very, very bad very quickly if you don't have readily available water sources. This is why it's a great idea to have, you know, good access to water, close by water, and ideally water that comes to you at surface level, such as a stream or a creek that's year-round, or rainwater catchment systems. And this is why rainwater catchment is such a great idea. It's very clean water, doesn't have a lot of minerals in it, and it's at ground level, so you don't have to expend a lot of energy pumping it up out of the ground. In fact, if you capture it up higher, let's say you have a tank sitting in your driveway or something, some of that water is above ground level. And I've done these experiments as well. If you have water tanks that are tall and you're collecting water off of a very tall building, like a tall barn, for example, then you can actually have some water pressure just from the gravity of your water tank being very tall. The water pressure isn't much, but it's better than nothing. And you will have some basic plumbing that's actually working. And you can even push water like that through a number of filters just with gravity alone. So it's not a bad idea to think about having a barn built. You can have those built relatively cheaply. Have a tall roof with tall gutters. You know, put the gutters up at 20 feet if you can. And then get a tall, narrow water tank where the water fills up vertically and becomes very high. And at that point, once it's high, you've got water pressure. That could be a lifesaver, given how much energy you normally have to expend in order to move water around. So these are just some things to think about living without electricity. It's not going to be easy. Won't be convenient. You'll lose a lot of weight if you're slightly overweight. We all will, because you're going to be working your butt off. Literally, in some cases. You're going to be working like crazy just to keep things moving.